and welcome. This is Trials and Tribulations. I'm Phil Airy, and I've got my two cohorts.
Sarah Owen Hughes.
And me, Faith Douglas.
Alistair is a garden designer, landscape architect and inspirer, a plantsman as well, and based in this area, and he's just about to set into a new venture, which is creating a garden design school to get more people into the industry creating. So he is now going to hopefully talk a little bit about show gardens as well, because he's been involved in some amazing show gardens here, which you might remember from previous years. So a big, big, warm Harrogate welcome, if you haven't got your coffee in your hands, for Alistair Baldwin of Alistair Baldwin Associates, our show gardener and landscape architect.
Thank you very much. Is this on?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, we can hear. So, obviously, Alistair, tell me a little bit about your pathway, because it's been circuitous, as most of our pathways have been in horticulture.
It has been circuitous, yeah. I think the best pathways are, I think...
Aren't linear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because, you know, you discover interesting things on the way. It started out with studying landscape architecture at what was then called Leeds Polytechnic.
Yes.
And then changed its name to a university, much to my disappointment. But I studied landscape architecture there and for 3 years, and then travelled for two, and then came back and studied landscape architecture there again, postgraduate. But, you know, landscape architecture is such a massive subject. The tutors at the time used to start our sessions by going to the door and opening it and saying, "See everything out there? That's your job."
You know, yeah.
From this door out is landscape architecture. From this door in is architecture. So it's everything. Down into the earth and up into the sky. You know, the weather, the soil, geology, everything up and down. And then everything horizontally, you know, you just have to know it all. It's a huge subject.
Mm.
And I didn't really feel like after 4 years of mostly studying, lots of not studying.
Lots of enjoying your studying,
lots
yes.
Lots of student-y stuff. Back then in the 80s when it was all about sort of Tetleys and rugby league, you know.
Can you all hear Alistair, by the way? Do you want me to move his mic a little bit? Can you move your mic a bit closer,
yes.
Alistair?
I'm just switching that off because that would be embarrassing, wouldn't it?
It's the quietest I've ever known you.
I felt like I didn't really know much about it, even after 4 years. So I started teaching landscape architecture, and I wrote a very precocious letter to the head of the department saying, I finished after 4 years and I still feel like I don't really know enough, especially about drawing. And so on. And this was pre, I'm going to show how old I am here, this was pre using computers to design stuff.
Yeah.
I still don't use computers to design stuff. I employ people to use computers to design stuff because they break when I go near them. But at the time, I could draw what I thought was quite well. So they said, yeah, come in and you can mill around in the studio and help design students learn to draw. And I ended up being there for 13 years. And got a real bug for teaching. At the same time, I was designing gardens myself. So I'd always been interested in the sort of horticulture and craftsmanship of making gardens rather than the broad-scale landscape architecture side of things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my career kind of wiggled its way to here, where I sort of grew the practice. And I've now got a team of five who all work from home across the north of England.
Yeah.
And I've never kind of stopped missing the teaching.
Yeah.
You know all about that.
I'm a recovering teacher. I gave up 2 years ago, and still any opportunity to come here and talk at people has been leapt upon.
So that's the route it's taken, really.
Yeah.
And now I've decided to set the school up.
So it's... that there is a big difference between landscape architecture and garden design, and there's a chasm between them. I actually gave a lecture a few weeks ago to one of the landscape architecture courses in Leeds, and it was final year students, and they couldn't name 10 plants between them because they said, "We've just done the hard landscaping." And their tutor said, "Well, it's okay, you'll pick it up when you're in practice. Just join a big practice." And they were coming up to me saying, we wish we'd done this in year one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's only so much you can do in a teaching day. So what would you, how would you describe the differences between landscape architecture and garden design?
Landscape architects are rubbish at planting.
Well, yeah, exactly. They're not plants people.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Landscape architecture, as I was saying, it's such a massive subject that even in 4 years you can't skim the surface. But not knowing about your plants as a landscape architect is like being an artist and saying, I don't know about the colour blue.
Yeah.
It's such a fundamental thing. And colleges aren't, and universities aren't pushing it enough.
And it is the thing that the customer wants to know. The customer doesn't necessarily want to know about the drainage.
No,
you think about the drainage. They want to know about the pretty fluffy things at the front of the border.
They want to know about the pretty fluffy things, exactly right. And quite often the customers know quite a bit about the pretty fluffy things themselves, and they want you to help them learn more.
Yeah.
But it's what separates us as garden designers from architects. You know, a lot of our projects involve working with architects and developers and interior designers. The bit that none of them know about is plants and Latin.
Yeah. You know. They're really so frightened of plants and Latin.
Well, when you start spouting Latin, then they all sort of get nervous and look at their shoes, you know. And it's the thing that separates us as horticulturists out from every other profession. So it's something that we really do need to be good at and interested in, you know.
So what's involved in a really good garden design?
What's involved in one?
Start at the beginning.
Knowing your client.
Yeah.
Getting to know them as human beings, you know. And what some garden designers, mostly in London, forget is that it's not your garden.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's your client's garden. Yeah. You know, it's their house, you know. Yeah. It's where they go about their daily lives. It's where when they come downstairs in their pyjamas and they look out the window, that's what they look at, you know. It's where their children play, their grandchildren play. It's where they have birthday parties. It's a part of their fabric, you know. So you go in temporarily and you create something that you leave for them that they then play their lives out in.
Yeah.
So you've got to get to know them. You've got to get to know what their children like and, you know, the characters of their children and, you know, what's their dog like and how much time do they have? What are their jobs? When do they go on holiday? You know, you have to know how they tick as a family unit.
Yeah, yeah. And what they want to use the garden for?
What they want to use the garden for?
Because a lot of people's garden is an extension of their home, isn't it? It's almost like a green room.
So true. Yeah, it's an extension of the home and an extension of them.
Yeah.
You know, so we get commissioned to design gardens because people like the gardens that we make, which is sometimes a bit awkward because they sort of wave their hand out at the garden and say, we want you to do that thing that you did at that other garden that we like. Can you do that here? And you then chat to them and you think, what I did at that last garden, I don't think that's quite right for you.
Yeah.
But they really want it, you know.
Yeah.
Because they might have, you know, 4 really active kids under the age of 10.
Yeah.
And you go, well, yeah, the people I did that garden for, they had no kids.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's why it looks like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yours maybe needs to be a little bit more, you know,
robust.
Tailored. Yeah, robust. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a really important thing when you start out is getting to know them and then getting to know the site and getting to know the site in every sense. And that we spend time in the morning and the middle of the day and then the evening.
Yeah, so that would be looking at light levels, weather,
light levels,
aspect, everything like that, wouldn't
absolutely
it?
And also those kind of boring things like, you know, where does the water sit after it's rained and which areas are compacted. You know, sometimes there's things that you can't see but you can work out through a bit of detective work that you know, rabbits are coming through the garden at night, or, you know, the rain doesn't fall on certain parts of the garden, or neighbours' trees are doing something in the garden, you know. So you have to do quite a bit of detective work at the beginning to understand how this piece of land operates, you know, because you're making this intervention onto it. And if you don't get that right, the land fights back.
Yeah.
It really fights back.
Well, you want it to be sustainable, don't you? So you want to plant up a garden, create a garden that lasts, so you walk 10 years down the line, that it's still there, the plants are still growing, it's thriving, isn't it?
Exactly right, yeah. You know, and if you design a garden here in Harrogate, it's one kind of soil.
Yeah,
very heavy clay.
Heavy clay, really thick heavy clay in places, but also, you know, there's the seams of running sand
yes.
through Harrogate. which pop up in some gardens, and one neighbour in Harrogate can have a particular type of soil, and next door have got a different one. Really different to if you go only up the road to Ripon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ripon sits mostly on gravel.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really, really free draining. Go up to where I am in Richmond, and there's bedrock not that far down.
Really?
So, you know, you need to look at the maps and understand the kind of bigger picture,
yeah.
really, which some clients are very quick to tell you, oh, it's free draining soil here, and you know, you go down a foot and it's, you can make pots out of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then is it to the drawing board and you sit down and draw your pretty pictures? She's so rude.
Yeah, that's about it.
And then we're finished.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time kind of exploring how the garden's going to look and feel.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, as designers, we don't impose an aesthetic on a garden. We draw the aesthetic out yeah. of the place, and we do that with the clients. Mm-hmm. Because invariably, you know, we get told quite a bit, no orange, no colour orange anywhere, you know, no yellow in the planting.
Yeah.
You know, we get that quite a lot. No maintenance, zero maintenance. I don't know anything. You know. So you have to kind of explore with them what they mean quite often. So we talk a lot about colour. We talk a lot about the style of the garden, yeah. how it feels, how the light hits it, where they're going to want to sort of sit. What they do in each room of the ground floor of the house. So, you know, when they come out of doors, what's that room? Is it the utility room?
Yeah.
In which case, you're stepping out that door for one reason, whereas if it's the kitchen, you're stepping out that door for a completely different reason, to go outside
yeah.
and eat, you know. So we start a lot with pictures.
Yeah.
And we work with photographs and pictures, and we just lay them all out on the table. And very quickly, they'll go, oh, I love that. Not so sure about that. I don't like that. Husband mm-hmm. go, I like that. The wife goes, well, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Husbands always point at really stripy lawns.
Yeah.
Really neat. Oh, up and down with a mower like that. They go, well, that's what I want. And the wives, you know, point at all sorts of different things. So sometimes you get this incredible kind of team, this unit you see in the client, where they're both immaculately neat people, and they go, this is how we want the garden to be ordered. And then other times you get them having a kind of two-way conversation in front of you, and which is in itself is interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we spend a lot of time doing that, and then we start in 3D.
Yeah.
So we build a 3D model of the house, and then we build a 3D model of all the land.
Yeah.
I say we. We've got people who do that. And then you can see it, you can look at it, so you can effectively hold the site like that in your hand, and you can do that with it, which is great. So you see yeah. it as a thing,
yeah.
which is very different to seeing it as something that you're in and you're looking out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you'll see those trees there, which are not in the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
So you start to understand what's in the distance. You know, a viaduct, or the neighbour's trees, or that petrol station, or the spire of that church, which aren't on your plan when you're at the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're a mile away or something like that. So we start with 3D, and then we start sketching in 3D, because a lot of gardens are sticky uppy.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just flatty flatty. You
yeah.
know, so when you draw, getting technical. When you draw a plan, everything's flat, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, but one of the most interesting things I was ever told about what we do as garden designers and landscape architects is that you design the spaces in between things.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is so cool, isn't it? It really makes you think.
And also I think quite often you'll find that your clients see their garden. They can't see where it's going, but also they definitely can't see a flat plan. A 2D plan
no.
is really incomprehensible for a lot of people. So actually seeing things in 3D becomes much more tangible.
Really important.
Yeah.
Really important. Yeah. You know, anything like a hedge or a tree or, you know, a shrub or a step or a level change. If you can pull it up into the air and show them what it looks like, they get a feel for the size of
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
You know, and we always put people in
yes.
our models,
that's
which
so
helps.
Because
yeah. they can see the proportion of things.
Scale.
Mm. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we'll put a car in the drive and suddenly they go, oh, I can see how big yeah. the patio is because, look, there's a table and chairs on it.
Yeah.
You know. So we start there and show them the model. And the good thing about modelling like that is that they're very, very easy with these softwares now. They're very easy to adapt. So if you know, if they want a hedge lower or a wall moving, you pick it up and move it.
Yeah.
You know, in front of them on the wall. Oh, what, like this? You can push the top of the hedge down. Yeah. Or, you know, make a window or an arch in it or something. So it's very, in those early days, before we get remotely technical, we don't talk about types of paving or, you know, lighting or anything. We don't, or even plant species. We just, and if they start doing it, we say, no, we'll do that later.
Yeah.
We need to talk about where are you going to eat?
How's
where are the bins?
Going to be used,
how's it
going to
feel? Are we, is it a warm space? Is it a sheltered space? Is it a big space? Is it a colourful space? So we use those kind of quite broad words, and it gets them talking because they're words that they understand and are familiar with.
Yeah.
And then later we do get really technical.
Into the technical things, yeah.
Yeah, it does get quite techie.
Like?
Like. Then after that point, the clients don't really... They sort of glaze over at the drawings because our drawings get all technical.
Yeah.
And we start talking to the contractor.
It's when you start talking numbers and measurements. And I know that's when I switch off.
Yeah, numbers and measurements.
Depths of foundations and things like that.
Yeah. Reinforced concrete. You know, they start looking out the window and glazing over, you know.
When are we getting the fluffy things?
When are we getting the pretty bits on the top? Exactly. That's
the
what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
But we then bring contractors in and start talking to them, and they like all the technical drawings.
Yeah. So it's real teamwork, isn't it? You have a real team that you have to pull in to create a garden.
Yeah, and we like doing it like that, really, because it's more fun.
I think it has to be, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It does have to be a collaboration.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a Yorkshire way of doing it, because there's lots of amazing craftspeople up here.
Yeah.
Joiners and drystone wallers and...
Yeah.
Stonemasons, carpenters, and so on. You know, and we're really blessed with that in Yorkshire. So, we put a bespoke team together usually for to make our gardens, which is a sort of project management headache, I suppose. But it's also a reflection of the fact that there aren't many up here, and I think this is a good thing. There aren't many contractors, these sort of huge outfits that you get in the home counties, who have in-house electrician, in-house water feature specialist, in-house carpenter and stuff. There's very few. An outfit that we do use, and they've built four or five gardens for us, are actually Hacks.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Whose orange name you see on all the skips here. That's very glamorous, isn't it? on all the skips. But they are fantastic, and they're just out in Ripley up there. And they've built quite a few because they do have all those people in-house.
Yeah.
So our big gardens they build. Yeah.
So tell me about this, your latest meander, because you're returning back to teaching.
Yes.
And you're teaching people how to do what you've just described, this huge, complex job that seems, from what we see on TV in particular, as just doing a quick sketch, bringing loads of people, done in 48 hours, costs threepence halfpenny.
Don't get me going.
Well, it's great because it has got people talking and understanding that there's a skill and an art to
it. It's been great for that, hasn't it?
It's popularised it, but it hasn't given an accurate picture. And that, I know that's expectation management is the hardest element of the job. But what are you doing with your garden school? Talk about that now. This is your free plug for your Yorkshire garden school.
Get my script out. It's a passion of mine, and I've been thinking about it for a number of years since I stopped teaching 15 years ago. It's something I've been wanting to do again. And in a way, I've been sort of holding off until I've had a body of work behind me that makes it look like I'm in a position to teach other people how to do it.
Yeah.
I'm really conscious of that, you know. And I was always looking to my teachers and lecturers when I was at university, kind of, well, have you done what you're teaching me to do? Maybe that's a bit binary by me, but it was always something that I wanted to see their portfolio and their back catalogue so that they were proving that, you know, they could actually go out and do what they're teaching. So I felt recently like I've perhaps got to that point. So that was the first thing. And then during my career in the north here, I've been asked several times a year about where to go and study garden design in the north.
Yeah.
And the places that I was able to reel off was too short a list.
Yeah.
It was just too short a list. There's just not enough. So there was the real appetite, and there's the talent in the north and the potential talent in the north, but just not enough of a choice of places to go and study. So pre-COVID, I started on the idea and obviously had to sort of shelve it. and have now sort of taken the plunge at Harewood House, who've been fantastic with it all, and setting up a school that really helps folks in the north learn garden design in a way that gets them ready to practice garden design in the north.
Yeah.
Because it is different.
Yeah.
To how it works in the south. It is different. Yeah. In a really good way.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. So we start in September.
Amazing.
Diploma in garden design is our main one. It's a year-long course, mm-hmm. academic year. Mm-hmm. And then we have a really nice kind of ever-growing suite of short courses that we're offering as well.
Fantastic. So if you were to give a tip to somebody, a budding garden designer, what would that be?
Learn about plants.
There you go.
Learn your plants. And a good way to learn about plants is to handle them.
Yeah.
You know, you can. Books are great, and particularly if you can read books that also have a plan showing where all the plants are, and then a photograph of what that looks like, because you can see how those plants have been physically mapped out. Mm-hmm. But coming to a show like this is great because you can pick the plant up, read the label, handle it,
and talk to the grower.
Exactly.
There's lots of gardens you can volunteer in as well. I'm sure.
Really good point.
Harewood House has a voluntary.
Big
program.
Big volunteer team.
I know
team.
We do.
Thought Perro does.
Yeah, so anything like that. I think
Rudding
volunteering,
does.
Getting hands
exactly.
on.
So good. Get your hands in the earth. Also, you know, if there are garden design practices and garden designers and nurseries and stuff that mm-hmm. you can go and like work part time for or do work experience and stuff. Yep. That always helps, and we always have folks coming to us to do that, and we get them out on site setting out planting schemes, because you give someone 150 salvias to place out. By the end of that day, they can spot a salvia from 50 paces. And it sinks in, and then for the rest of your life, you know that plant.
Yeah. You know? You do. I think you become an expert with what you've worked with. Because I know when I've done various different places, I've gone in the greenhouse, I've been in people's gardens, I'm now in the arboretum.
Yeah.
And I know about bedding because of my time in a greenhouse. Not because that's what I do. So it is really what you actually are hands-on with, isn't it?
But it's putting the time in, because, like the arboretum at Thorpe Perry, you will know every tree there because you walk past them every day.
Try to,
yeah.
It's a lot of trees. It's a lot of trees.
But plants are like people, anybody in here, if a relative of yours or a member of your family walked past the far side of that hall out there, you'd go, oh, look, there's Dad. And so, what, 60 metres away? And so and that's because you recognise the way that he walks or the hat that he's got on or something.
Yeah.
And it's the same with plants.
It is,
if you get to know the shape of the leaf, their habits, and the way that they cast a shadow, or the gloss on the leaf, small things. It's the equivalent of going, oh, that's Dad's walk, you know the way that a particular grass blows in the wind.
Yeah.
If you get to know those little quirks and nuances of plants, you can spot them from 50 yards away, and it's like getting to know people and their personalities,
Fantastic. Alistair, that has been amazing. We could talk for the rest of the afternoon, but it has been quite a long day for everyone, and I'm sure people have got homes to go to eventually. Can we all give a huge thanks to Alistair Baldwin, our landscape architect?
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. That's been another edition of Trials and Tribulations. Now, if you liked it, please subscribe and follow. But until next time, keep it green.